I have with me in the studio or via phone, Jadel Kavlin, a local farmer and a loyal station interviewer and someone who's just as sincere and excited as me, but not necessarily a jokester that I know of. I don't know, Jadel, did you have any jokes going on this morning?
Oh my gosh. Well, we have a 6-year-old, so he just realized that April Fool's Day is a prank day. And so growing up, we always had pranks going on. My dad was kind of a jokester that way. So yeah, we're passing on the tradition a little bit.
Good. Well, you're allowed to insert any kind of jokes if you want this morning. I don't know if I can do that, but I'm throwing that out to all my interviewers. But meanwhile, thank you so much for being with us. And spring has sprung. I think the last time we talked, actually, you were about to have it hadn't quite happened yet, but you were about to have a big day on your farm. So let's just start by saying, how did that go? I certainly remember hearing about it, but I want to hear it from you, too.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, the pollinator party was wonderful. We're hoping to do it again this year.
Oh,
we haven't set a for sure date. It's free family fun event. And so, yeah, we had, at the time, we had Toasty Roma's food truck was here. We had Eddie Ojard was here playing his keyboard. It was wonderful. We had some people show up, actually some radio station volunteers that showed up in bumblebee costumes. And yeah, we had a ton of wonderful information. We had a gal that works for the Xerces Society was here doing a pollinator walk and wander with the young kids. And we had some vendors from the farmers market here selling their products. There was head of the Lakes Beekeeping Association was here to talk about if anyone was interested in honeybees. And yeah, so there was a lot of really great stuff. Shoreview Natives was here with some of their native plants. And yeah, so we're hoping to do that again this year. There's an annual pollinator week every year at the end of June. And so this year it's the 20th through the 26th. And we're trying to pick out an evening night this year to do it again. So there'll
good.
Be more information coming in the next couple of months. Yeah.
Good. I was wondering
what on the community events.
Yeah. We'll make sure to get it on there. And I'm really glad it went well. And it just is such a fun idea and a good lead in to yours. I consider you sort of the bee keeper of Two Harbors, certainly. And I know you just were writing for the paper about the importance of bees. And also right now is an important time for bees. So just tell us what you want to tell us about that.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, luckily, there's a lot of people around here that have much more experience than I do in the honeybee world. And fortunately, getting to know some of them over the years has definitely helped out with just my overall management. But yeah, right now, beekeepers up here are discovering if their honeybees have made it through the winter, if they tried to overwinter them. There's also a big mass migration of honeybees moving. They're pretty much out of California now, but there's over 1 million colonies that pollinate the almond orchards out there. And so from there, they start moving across the country to pollinate other crops. And then, of course, they do divide colonies up and sell them to hobby beekeepers like myself. So yeah, there's this big mass migration of honeybees going on. They'll replace the colonies that beekeepers lost this year. Unfortunately for our area, our region, there's some pretty big losses that are coming in numbers-wise. It was just a really hard, it was a long, cold spell, lots of snow around here, of course, and that's just hard on the bees. So so it'll be interesting to see this time of year, once the snow starts to melt and we start to see some of the willow trees bud out and the maple flowers, bees will start foraging. And that's when we start to see spring loss. Sometimes there can be some disease issues and such if we have a cool, wet spring, which kind of seems like we might this year.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's some management strategies to help out with that. But yeah, this is a hard time of year on things. So
yeah,
these poor little cold-blooded insects have a bit of a hurdle yet.
Yeah. And Jenna, when you talk about the mass migration, is this something you're talking about kind of a human managed mass migration, or is this the bees themselves that are doing the moving?
Oh, gosh, I wish it was the bees themselves.
Okay.
We'd probably do better at it. But no, yeah, they get loaded up in crates or on pallets on semi trucks, and they're moved out and back around the country. So, yeah, there's been, I'm sure, some of you have heard of some incidences where semis of bees have crashed on freeways, and it's definitely a big ordeal. Nobody wants a bunch of flying insects swarming highways.
Wow.
Yeah, unfortunately, that stuff does happen just because of, you know, the ins and outs of transportation. But yeah, there's actually beekeepers in our region that will rent their hives out to these almond orchard farms because there's just more demand for hives than what there's actually hives available. So it's one way to survive the winters is to let your bees go someplace warm. So there's some good things and bad things to it. I'll have an article, or had an article about bees, about this mass migration in the local Lake County Press. And so the colonies, when they're being transported and moved back, is when they go to these different commercial operations. And at these commercial operations, they'll divide these colonies so that they can replace any of the losses that we've had over the winter. So fortunately, honeybees are big agricultural dollars, and they have a lot of support behind them because of that. They're the most studied insect in the world, so we have a lot of force behind keeping them alive. And so I don't think there's going to be any shortage of being able to be a beekeeper anytime in the near future, hopefully. But certainly the native bees and some of the other pollinators are facing much larger hurdles just because they don't have the financial support to have the research going on behind them.
Mm. Interesting. And it makes it seem almost amazing that this used to all happen naturally. I mean, we have not been managing bees forever. And, you know, I don't know when it was that I first started hearing about sort of the bee crisis where, and I think it originally was sort of loss of habitat that was leading to there being so few bees that are so essential to our entire growing system. And so now it seems like everyone knows about it. And like you said, there's a lot of support to keep the bees alive so they can do their critical functions. But it does, I mean, because we've always had hard winters up here, you know, and so I guess bees have historically had a hard time up here. Is that a fair statement?
Yes and no. Of course, you know, we have some tougher winters than others. Actually, it wasn't until the late 80s and early 90s when a pest came from Asia over into our colonies. It's a mite. It's called the varroa mite. And we actually just learned something pretty interesting of years about these varroa mites. But yeah, they've been attacking our colonies now since about 1990, and since that time, it was really, it decimated the feral populations of honeybees. There used to be feral colonies that people could find here and there out in the woods and such, but that varroa mite is just detrimental to these honeybees, and they feed on a fat body, it's called. It's an organ in a honeybee, and that's actually the organ that helps these honeybees overwinter. So them feeding on that just, you know, it's part of their immune system. It's part of their winter storage. And so you can't find feral colonies of honeybees around here anymore. There's still some in the U.S., especially where it's a little bit warmer. But up here, we absolutely have to manage for varroa mites or they won't survive the winter. It's pretty few and far between that a colony will get through the winter without management around here.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know anybody that has done it without managing them somewhat. So
wow, so it really all started with essentially an invasive species that continues to just cripple the population today, or maybe it's actually turned into a different population at this point, like you said, that needs to be managed.
Yeah, it's definitely something that it's the number one factor for beekeepers as far as being able to keep their bees alive. If you're not managing for varroa, sooner or later your colony is probably going to be gone.
Wow.
So, yeah. So there's a lot of great education out there about it for beekeepers. And certainly anybody that's interested in beekeeping definitely should find other beekeepers to have for mentors and find out ways to help manage for that pest. Because, yeah, if you have honeybees, you have them. There's just no isolated situation anymore where they're not present. They'll sit and wait on flowers for bees to come to, and they just hop a ride to the colony, and then pretty soon, before you know it, you have a problem if you're not keeping an eye on things. So.
Yeah. So for those of us that live in town and we don't necessarily have a whole hive, but we would love to attract bees, we know having some native species on our lawn is a good idea. Is there anything else you can tell us about how to encourage bee life from the point of view of just a townie?
Yeah, so my favorite thing to relay to people is that when you're thinking about adding, you know, pollinator plants to your space, if that's what you want to do, look at flowering trees and shrubs, because you're going to get a lot more bang for your buck that way. There's thousands of flowers on a tree or shrub versus just, you know, a few perennials that you might be putting in your space. And of course, trees right now, we can't get enough of those as far as planting. So there's a lot of great options, especially through the soil and water conservation districts. They have tree sales in the spring, and you can find great pollinator species. They can help you with what species will work in your particular planting environment.
Yeah.
The other thing I like to tell people is I know we're all, any of us gardeners are eager right now to get out into the gardens, but you really should wait to clean up your gardens until we have consistent 50-degree temperatures. There are a lot of overwintering butterflies and caterpillars and different beneficial insects in that plant litter in your gardens. And most of them don't emerge until we have those 50-degree consistent temperatures. One of my favorites that people don't really think about that way are fireflies. They will not emerge out of that leaf litter and underneath those logs and such until it's 50 degrees consistently. So as eager as we are to get them cleaned up and nice, one thing you can do if you just can't help yourself is instead of, you know, bagging up that leaf litter or chopping it up or whatever you do with it, compost it, just kind of move it off to the side of your yard somewhere and let it, you know, still be a pile as much as you can. Don't use a leaf blower and blow it out of your garden, but definitely move it off to the side as intact as you can and let those creatures emerge before you start really cleaning things up.
Okay. I'm so glad you said that. I just learned something new from you every time, Jadel. I had no idea that there's a real reason to not disturb the soil until, are you kind of talking about 50 highs, right? Like it can go below 50, but if it gets up to 50 during the day consistently, then it's okay to start messing with your land?
Yeah, I mean, they don't want you doing it, you know, when it's really getting cold overnight still. You kind of want to wait on that too. So,
okay.
You know, 50 degrees during the day, absolutely. Make sure it's at least 50 during the day, and hopefully it's not dropping, you know, to those freezing temperatures. I know we get one here and there, and most of our creatures up here are pretty well adapted to that circumstance. But yeah, it's best, the longer you can wait, the better. And certainly, if you, like I said, if you're eager like I am, just move that stuff off to the side somewhere so that it's undisturbed until they reach those optimal temperatures.
Okay. All right. Well, we're running out of time, but just one quick question about seedlings. What are you doing?
Oh my gosh.
I mean,
I'm hoping to move all of them outside into the high tunnel today with
these
pictures. But yeah, we have quite a few shelves going already. We are ready.
You are ready. You have seedlings under lights, I assume?
Yeah. I do a lot of growing in our attached garage, actually, until I can start moving stuff outside. And I've had some of the plants outside in the high tunnel on some of the nicer days we've had, but it's still too cold at night to leave anything out there. Yeah, of course, I started some onions and leeks and celery and celerec and some of that stuff that needs a longer growing period kind of in the middle of February and have been going ever since. So.
Okay. You sound undaunted by all this rain and snow and chill mix that we're getting now.
Gardeners are the most hopeful people I've ever met.
Well, do you have any idea? Are you in touch with any sugar syrupers? I'm hoping it's going well because it really seems to be below freezing at night and above, but I have not personally gotten hold of anybody.
Yeah, well, of course, Jason and Cree with Never Summer Sugar Bush. I know that things were slow to start and kind of hit and miss, but I think that everybody's fingers are crossed that now with these warmer temps that things will really start to flow. I know just from talking with a few other farmers through the Lake Superior Sustainable Farming Association that a little bit further south that things are definitely flowing now, but they were really pretty wonky in the beginning. And I think it was just because we did have that cold and warm and cold and warm and not the typical, you know, just the above freezing and then freezing overnight. It was kind of all over the place there. And then I've heard that there's definitely the sap needs to be boiled down, or there's not as much sap coming out, and it's taking a lot more of the sap to make syrup. And they think it's because of the drought last year. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I want to hear what Cree and Jason have to say about it.
Yeah, that is really interesting. It's almost like they're in survival mode, conserving their liquid too. I mean, it makes sense. Interesting.
It does make sense. Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jadel. That was awesome. And I hope to have you again before too long, actually, to see how those seedlings are doing.
Oh, gosh. Thanks for having me, Katya. I hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. You take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye. That was Jadel Cavillin of Little Waldo Farm. What a knowledgeable person she is, and fun to have on the radio.